start. It's September 10th, and we're here for the third version of our expanded budget committee, still working on our presentations from departments. I wondered if we have any preliminary remarks from our county administrator or from Kevin McGuire or Rick.
Only about 40 minutes worth of remarks.
Well,
no.
Please
no remarks.
Keep it short.
Thank you, though.
All right, then let's move.
Kevin does. I'm sorry, Mike. Kevin has.
Kevin has something. All right.
As much as it pains me to dwell on the corrections pages, I can provide just a brief explanation about those. Last night, Jen Olin pointed out that I had mistakenly, in helping them with the OTRs, I had mistakenly used a wrong account code for one of the personnel savings lines in an OTR. So today you actually have replacement pages for yesterday's replacement pages in some cases. But there's one in the summary section and then some others in the sheriff's. In the section 4 in the sheriff's department.
I think that's a first.
A replacement to the replacement. Yeah, it probably won't be the last. Sorry.
No.
Any questions on that? All right. Our first department tonight is our county clerk's office. Maureen Reynolds.
So tonight with me, I have Alana Congdon, Deputy County Clerk at the County Clerk's Office, and Julie Seeley, who's a supervisor at DMV.
We're pleased to have you both. Go right ahead.
So we have the expenditures, revenues. Revenues are up. Both offices are very busy. Real estate is busy. People are buying lots of cars. It's a healthy economy here. Our full-time equivalents have changed a little. We're doing some succession planning with both offices. We have a few long-time term employees that are getting ready to retire, and we've been working on making sure our offices still run good after they leave. Our OTRs are... We're asking for, they're both one time. The one is for an addition to our LaserFish platform that we use. There is a module we want to buy. It's a one-time purchase that will help the county and with the scanning of our documents. The second one is for succession planning at DMV. Roxanne is still the deputy county clerk. She's part-time right now until she retires out, and she and Julie are working together to make sure the office runs really well. So I don't take very good photos. These are all from my cell phone, but I like to take them. So the shared services with LaserFish, not only have we incorporated every municipality in Tompkins County in our records management program, we also have incorporated Cortland County and its municipalities. So we are hosting for them, and we do a lot of training. In our training groups, we have usually between 125 and 150 people come to the user groups. We're all about saving money. This one is a meme. I thought it was a meme-y, because I'm old. Alana had to tell me it's a meme. So we did, at a conference we went to, the first one was us before LaserFish with the digital archiving. The second is how our life is now. And then I go to Albany and I talk about what we've done with our project. It still confuses them that governments can work together and save money. But I keep going up and telling them that it really does work. So I won an award. I didn't know I was getting it. So it's about collaboration and innovation. They say it's a government influencer of the year. I thought it was because I just had big parties and everyone enjoyed them. But that we got this last year for all the work we've done with shared services.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So with the RBA, we want to track and see how happy our customers are. Now, I already know that I have the best county clerk's office and the best DMV in the state of New York, if not the universe, but we want to prove it. So we, for the county clerk's office, we set out an online survey to the legal community. An average rating, you know, between 1 and 5 was 4.88, and we had really great comments about how well the office is. And then at DMV, we have our little machine. I love that thing. So it can tell me any time of day when, if things are, we need more coverage or whatever. 1 week, we had 100% positive feedback. That doesn't happen anywhere. The commissioner of motor vehicles came down from Albany. He's new, saw our machine, saw all the training that our staff had done, and was so impressed that he's going to follow some of the training things that I had sent to him. We had a recent Twitter thing. Tompkins County DMV is putting the stereotypes to shame. In and out in 13 minutes for a driver's license renewal and enhanced upgrade. I've had sandwich orders take longer. So, do a little bragging today. And with that little machine, like I said, we can track, like, if someone's not happy. Is it during lunch hours? Is it Friday? What days do we have to have more staff? Because I can't have all staff all the time at every window. So we try to work it out so that people are always, their lines aren't bad.
What, Mark, Maureen?
Yes.
Could you go back?
Sure.
So that dip, that's lunch hour? Is
that 12
to 2, 1 yep. o'clock is the level.
Yep.
That's the satisfaction level.
The satisfaction level. And that could be just one person, but it shows up. Yeah, you know, and we did this for the RBA. We also did, we put sheets at the windows. We got big digital clocks so people could come in and time themselves so, you know, someone doesn't have to stay there. My staff doesn't have to say how long it takes. And they get to the counter, and they would write down the average wait. And it ended up being the average wait was 2.61 minutes, which is 2 hours less than Cortland. So we're pretty happy. You know, with the enhanced driver's licenses and the real ID coming up next year, it is a lot busier and takes a lot more time with the customers, but we have been able to handle it. So, and like I said, the real ID, that happens in October of 2020, where to fly domestic flights, you're going to have either a real ID or enhanced driver's license or a passport. So the office has been really busy with that happening. And we try to be as transparent and accessible as possible. So on our website, we have all our records available that can be public for the public to search. I know the legal community loves it. You know, people call in. We just tell them to check our website. We walk them through it. They love it. And it's free. Most counties charge. We don't, because I think public information should be free. We also, in our LaserFish platform, have older records and all different kinds of things, not just for our office, but for other county departments. So truly public records that can be seen by the public, we have put up there for people to use. Now, organ donation is really important to us. April is the month that we really go all out. We are number two in the state for organ donation. The county that beat us is Hamilton, which has 7,784 people that live in that county. So, you know, we keep telling them that we already have, most of our population is already an organ donor, so we have less to choose from, but we're still coming in number two. And they really get into it and dress up and decorate the office. And that one in the bottom is a vegan cake because one of our employees is vegan. And we really celebrate. One of the big things we do is naturalization ceremonies. This last year we've had more ceremonies. They keep calling and ask us to get more and more people naturalized. So far this year we'll have five ceremonies. And here are my teams. Definitely couldn't do it without them. They make me look good. Any questions?
I have one, sure. Maureen. With the efforts by the state to capture the renewals of registrations and driver's licenses, mm-hmm. and other kinds of things through online and mailing to Utica, how are we doing as far as revenues are concerned Are we holding our own? Are we losing revenues? What's happening?
I think we're really doing good. Where we lose it would be registration renewals, and it is easy to go online and do it. And they have captured my picture, so I thank you at the end when it happens, but we don't get money from that. However, we do have an internet revenue sharing agreement with the state, and once we reach a threshold, we get a certain amount back. We will be working with New York State DMV to increase that amount in the future, since that's how things are going to go. As for the driver's licenses, they pretty much need to come to us now with the real ID and enhanced, because we need to capture their photos and do the vision test. So we have a big influx of that happening right now.
Glenn?
Maureen, that's one question I have.
Sure.
My wife just got a personalized license plate. Mm-hmm. She went through the internet or the website, and it came back with your picture on it saying thank you for registering. Mm. But I told her, I said, you weren't supposed to do that because we don't get the money for it. Albany does. And she was a little upset that this says that Maureen says I did right. So
Yeah, they kind of cut it off the website. But my brother-in-law went out one time. He goes, oh, I saw your photo today when I renewed online. I'm like, you did what? But he goes, yeah, you thanked me. I said, well, they just cut it from the website and put it up there. But with the personalized plates, she'd have to go on the website to do it. We can't do those in office.
Donate for life, so.
Yeah, they've taken those away from us. The only ones that we can give out are the county clerk plates, the 11X, 7X, and TP. Okay. So.
I had Ann next.
Thank you, Maureen, for your presentation and all the great work that you guys do in your departments. I did I think you saw the short video I did going to DMV and showing people how you save our county money by registering or renewing things locally. And there was no wait when I went, and it only took, I'd say, about 4 minutes. I had to renew my driver's license and registration for a car. I think it would have been less than 4 minutes, but there must have been a problem with the camera that day, because every picture it took, I looked older. So so you might want to look into that. So my question is, it looks like your fees are staying pretty much stable at the DMV, might be a little bit adjusted at the clerk's office. Is that something, like what's the long-term? What do you guys do in the long term? Like, how often do you up the fees for various things?
All our fees are state mandated.
Okay.
So when we get them. The newest one would be the license plate fee, whatever that's going to be when that all hammers out. I know they're trying to get it lower right now from the $25.
Okay, so that's state mandated. And the clerk's office, is that also?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mike?
Now, I just wanted to say, you know, a lot of people, you always do your licenses and your other, your license plates there, but, you know, every once in a while somebody has, like, this unique thing. So I had a guy, he's a pilot, and his passport read his name, but he goes by his middle name, so it made it very difficult to go through the airport, and I brought it to Maureen, and she was actually able to not redo the passport, but had another solution for him, and he was very happy. So it's like that little thing that, you know, because papers are important. You know, to be able to do anything, really. So he was very thankful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And the vegan cake, that just tickled me. So thank you for that in particular. I'm sorry I missed that party. The couple questions. One of the things that you said was a little disturbing, which is that the state no longer allows us to do the certain, like the special licenses. Is that so? I mean, I'm assuming it's so that they keep the fee?
Correct. The state, we're always in an argument with the state. They try to take away everything that's easy and grabs them money quickly. And they try to throw back everything that's hard and we get no money for or little money for. But we fight it out with them all the time.
Of course. I partly knew the answer to that. I wanted the public to also hear that. I think it's really important. The other question I guess I had in that is with the new license plates, do we get any people traded in? They're going to have to at some point. There's a requirement at a certain deadline. Is that the case? I can't remember exactly the new license plates that will be coming out.
They're still hammering it out. trying for April, but they're fighting over the fees right now on whether it should be $550 or whatever instead of $25, and so they're working on that right now.
And would we get any of those fees, or it all goes to state?
All state.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I had another question, Maureen. We've been hearing since the state passed the law about driver's licenses being available for folks that are resident here may not be legal residents, for example. Some of the county clerks are saying that they're not going to issue those driver's licenses. I wondered what you're hearing, and certainly what's our position on that.
I will be issuing whatever the law is on December 15th or whatever. So if that's what the law is, that's what we will be doing. I know I'm one of the few Democrat county clerks in the state, so most are violently opposed against it and have filed federal lawsuits. So
thank you for doing that.
Thanks for that answer.
Sure. Anything else?
We
have a nice evening.
Thank you for your time and your information, and for helping us understand your department.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, we're 3 minutes early, folks. Let's keep it up.
All right. All right.
Don't jinx it.
We're going next to the Tompkins County Area Development. I see Heather McDaniel, and I see Martha Armstrong. Whenever you're ready.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to present here this evening. Everyone knows Martha and Heather. So here we have our recommended budget. Our actual recommended budget for 2020 is a combination of our regular budget would be $255,418 with an over target request of $45,000. You probably know these numbers better than I do. I understand you have very thick binders. Just as a reminder, our county funding comes from a mix of property tax and room tax, and you'll see that reflected there. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to remind everybody that in 2019 we entered into a memorandum of understanding with the county for a 5-year period that provides financial support to TCAD. Some of the highlights of that memorandum of understanding was that it fixed an amount and we would have a 2% increase each year. This is the second year of that 5-year MOU. With the room tax amount contribution to TCAD declining and the property tax amount increasing over that period. Some of the other things in the MOU included at least biannual reports to the HED committee. I think we've been there, we've had someone there every month this year so far, and we'll continue to do that. More input on our annual work plan, and our plan is to be there in October earlier in our process to do that. Strengthening the collaboration with workforce. You'll see that Julia Maddock is here, and that's something that we added a program area around that and are working more diligently around workforce this year, and we'll continue to do so. Martha Robertson joined the executive committee of TCAD's board this past year. She's provided some really valuable input from the county's perspective. And then in 2022, which I'm going to blink, and it's going to be 2022, there'll be a task force review of the return on investment that TCAD provides and the financial contribution from the county. So at TCAD, we are dedicated to building a thriving and sustainable economy that improves the quality of life in Tompkins County by fostering the growth of business and employment. Our vision is a flourishing economy with exciting, innovative firms that inspire and attract a talented workforce. For us, it's really about economic prosperity in Tompkins County. We have a 34-member board, a very diverse board that represents nearly every sector of the economy, public-private partnerships, key business sectors. In our community, it's really, I call it my brain trust on any given day. I have people to tap for great information and advice. At TCAD, we operate as a staff of five. We are getting ready later this year to increase our staff number to six. And that is part of our ongoing increasing collaborations in that workforce arena. At TCAD, one of our prime program areas is providing direct services to business and industry. We focus primarily on key traded sector industries, manufacturing, industrial development, research and development companies, healthcare sector, and some of the larger tourism and visitor facilities in the county. This is a list of the primary direct services that we provide to businesses. Our revolving loan fund program is really targeted to smaller companies, startup and early stage companies that might not be fully fundable by a bank, and we want to give them a chance here in Tompkins County. The Industrial Development Agency, I think, is on the other end, sort of the bigger businesses as they buy buildings and build buildings. It's really about increasing our tax base and creating quality jobs, job opportunities, and a couple of other things at the IDA. We not only do industrial development, but have taken the lead in New York State in offering incentives for off-site community off-site community solar facilities that provide 100% renewable energy. And we also, in our partnership with the City of Ithaca over the past 20 years now, have been providing incentives to create a vibrant and dense downtown. And I would venture to say here that in the past 5 years, folks that live in the City of Ithaca are seeing their tax rates go down, in part due to the work that the IDA has done to increase the tax base here. The Development Corporation, we're serving the larger not-for-profits in the community, providing low-cost financing for expansion and facilities projects. Martha here manages the county's Tourism Capital Grants Program, so take a look around at all of your beloved cultural activities. Martha may have had something to do with coordinating some of those grants. And then we provide a really valuable service to local businesses in helping connect them to other regional, local, state, and even federal incentives. And that was just one program area. Our other program areas that we focus on at TCAD, business retention and expansion, our BR&E program, is a critical information source for us as we go out and meet with businesses to understand their needs and make sure that we are planning and delivering the kinds of services that they need to be successful here. We also provide strategic planning for the county, including the county's economic development strategy. We provide economic development leadership, providing the business perspective in meetings and in policy areas around the county, also at the regional level and at the state level. Two new program areas that we added this year, one being community awareness, really taking a harder look at how we present our work and what we do in the community, and then second, workforce development. We elevated that as a program area because I think we recognize that it's the talent and the workforce that's really going to drive our prosperity now and in the future. If we get this right, we're going to be the community where people want to work and they want to be here. Some some of the major influences. Am I taking questions?
We can take them if you want, or you can.
Sure.
You want to take them as we go along?
Yeah,
who
I
has
can
a question,
that.
Shauna?
I was wondering, I know last year we talked about the focus being a little bit more on the workforce. Have you hired that person from last year that we talked about?
We have not yet. We hired our fifth staff person in January to do business services. And as everyone knows, I've been in this position a year last week. So we sort of took some time internally to look at our staff and how we operated together as a team. And also for me to get my feet wet a little bit working with the Workforce Development Board and really understanding the issues and how that position was going to relate to a lot of the existing services that are being provided. And I will say that I was actually working on the job description today. So
that will be the sixth person that you're hiring?
Yes,
and
it is on our way.
And what is the position titled?
Right now, the working title is Workforce Development Director.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Martha.
Yeah, I'd point out that one of the pieces of that is, a big piece, is the... We've got the cap, not the capital campaign, the membership campaign that you run every 5 years that wrapped up, 8 months ago, 7 months ago. So that was a big part of the fund. It was the funding fully going to be there for that position. The county's funds are only a piece of that. So it wasn't like because we passed our program that was the sufficient money. So.
Yes, and we did wrap up our investment initiative that covers almost 40% of our annual budget over the period from 2019 to 23. We wrapped up in June, and we were about $33,000 short of our $1.9 million goal. But I am confident enough that, even with that little bit of a shortfall, we can still afford to hire the staff person. So we're getting ready to do that. And our goal in our work plan was really to have that done by the end of the year. Baby steps. I want to make sure I get this right. Some of the major influences that we work with when we talk to businesses and we work in our community, increasingly some of the manufacturers here are competing in a global marketplace. And they talk about that in terms of their location and the cost of doing business here. It's something that we are very much aware of. Recession with a question mark in our BR&E program. Businesses are starting to talk about tightening their belts and waiting to see what happens next year. We've had, I think, 13 years of, economic prosperity at the national level. But I will tell you that much like social service agencies, economic development agencies, too, are very busy during recession because we are working very hard to make sure that businesses stay here and succeed here. So I'm anticipating that next year, the year after, we may be even busier than we are now. Talent, whether you call it workforce, job creation, or talent, it's the people that really make up the businesses and make them successful here. So it goes very much in line with that workforce development staff person and the work that we're doing in terms of collaborating with other agencies. And other things that we are working on that inform our work plan and the work we do with businesses are quality and reliable energy, particularly for manufacturing processes out in our business and technology park and for some of our major industry that's here. Workforce housing, if people don't have a place to live, they might not want to work here. Air service and transportation. We love being in the middle of New York State and all the beauty that it affords. For some, the transportation's not great to get here and to get out of here in a really quick manner, which is good because we probably won't get a Trader Joe's. We can rely on Green Star. And then quality of life, everyone says they have it. We really do have it, and I think we tend to capitalize on that. Some of the businesses are located here specifically because their talent likes the quality of life here. So when we set out in our five-year investment initiative, we set some strong goals for ourselves. This is what we're looking to do over the next 5 years. Work with companies that will invest over $500 million here, create 550 new jobs, which will increase payroll by $33 million. That's more spending available in our community by all those new jobs. And more importantly, I think, is retaining 3,450 jobs, which will have tremendous benefit for our community. And I'm going to turn it over to Martha to talk about our over-target request this year.
Yeah, so the over-target request is for an update, and it'll be a very thorough update of the 2010 countywide intermunicipal water and sewer study. This was the first time we'd really done a deep study of this, inspired actually by Martha Robertson saying, what's going on with water at a economic development collaborative meeting. We put together a little kind of client committee that included county, TCOG, some of the health department folks, and were able to undertake this study at that time with a shared municipal services grant mostly and some local match from the IDA. We want to redo the update of really looking at the 14 water and, well, 7 water and 7 sewer treatment, wastewater treatment plants, how those distribution systems are working, how they're interconnecting, what are some of the new challenges such as drought. The resiliency study will be looking at that, but we'll be really integrating that into this study. And looking also at, we want to add this year, besides that matrix that tells us what are some of the priority items, what are they going to cost, what are they going to affect, also add a 10-year facility plan that will help coordinate the activities of the multiple organizations that are running these different plants. I mean, clearly there's two really big ones. There's Bolton Point and there's the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Plant. But all these smaller ones, of those 14 plants, 13 of them actually serve more than one municipality. And then some of them kind of interconnect and all flow together. And so, say, North Campus is, Cornell's proposing and building a North Campus facility. If something happens in Dryden or in Cayuga Heights or elsewhere in the town of Ithaca, that can actually impact the capacity of pipes that are serving this, and then it's all going down into the city. And to try to have a more dynamic analysis of what's going on, so that as all these developments are being planned and are, you know, trying to interface and understand each other, we have a better baseline to be working from, to be coordinating these activities. So that's the goal of this project, and we're asking for the county to pay about half of it. It will certainly help from county planning's point of view, their work with municipalities, and as with this study, we're looking at the development focus areas, particularly what for supporting housing and aligning the zoning in areas where there is water and sewer for the multifamily and higher density housing. That's been one of the factors here among many to do this study.
Question from Anna.
Two things. One, I know in the previous study for this, we did focus on drought as a challenge to evaluate the system to see how it managed. But a lot of the predictions in climate change for this area are more expecting significant periods of flooding and high precipitation. So I'm wondering if that is also a focus of this and will also be part of what you would be planning for this study update.
A lot of the communities actually are doing infiltration work now, which would relate to all that water, extra water getting into the pipes, which puts a lot of demand on the treatment systems. We certainly will be looking at an update of the status of those projects and which ones are critical to be continuing with. And one of the benefits of the matrix in approach that we developed in this study, the original one that we'll update, is being able to look at the cost and the priorities and, figure out how to be addressing those in a systematic way over time.
And the other question with that is part of the project to also map out the age of the piping infrastructure that we have, so we have a sense of maybe moving forward what needs to be prioritized?
With the first one, we didn't go right down to the pipe level, but we certainly looked at major pieces of equipment and kind of segments. So I would have to, really, that's kind of detailed. I would ask Dave Herrick, who knows the age, I think, of every pipe in the county.
Yeah. I ask only because of how many pipes have burst in the last year that has cost an insane amount of money, at least in the city. But I know also in Lansing as well they had issues, so I was curious. And the other, I'm just going to steal an opportunity here. Hopefully we won't delay that much, but if for like 1 minute or a half a minute, you could describe to people the program that you're doing with the food bank, that so people understand the industry support that you are also offering for TCAT. I know it's not part of your OTR, but I kind of would love to get people to hear a little bit about it because it's amazing.
Sure, I'll say for a minute, TCAD has been incubating the Finger Lakes Regional Prosperity Network over the last 5 years, and our first major program area coming out of that, I administer that program, is the Food Processing Business Incubation Program. It's currently serving 4 counties, including Tompkins, because the Industrial Development Agency, or the TCDC, I'm not sure which, put in money to help include Tompkins County, but the other 3 counties and kind of the baseline is supported by an Appalachian Regional Commission grant. We'll be expanding to 9 counties next year with the USDA funding. We're just finishing up the contract for that, but we will be having funding to continue that, and it's providing regional kind of incubation and resource connection and navigation to get to resources for startup and small food businesses to help them scale up to reach larger wholesale markets.
Thank you. Ann?
Thank you. So on the topic of the planning for infrastructure, the water sewer infrastructure study. So I just had a comment, but Trumansburg, the village of Trumansburg, was just considering how to look at, in the different residences, how to investigate whether septic systems, or septic, sump pumps, whether those discharge into the septic lines that are then go to a large septic system. And so they're playing with that, and I don't know if that would be something to look in with this study, or if it would be something for the health department to look into. But it'd be nice if there was some way that we could have something, some model that would say, here's something that municipalities could do to make sure that that's not happening, because I know as a home inspector there are a lot of sump pumps that are connected right to the municipal sewage system. So as you can imagine, basements are starting to flood and all of that water is getting pumped out into the septic or to the municipal waste. So just, I guess, a comment on that. And I know also someone mentioned about different areas having a lot of water supply leaks and pipe bursts and over the winter. Don't quote me on this number, but I would estimate I was getting an alert for the village of Trumansburg every week that there was a pipe burst, and that's a lot of money. And so then that kind of begs the question, and again, I don't know if this will be covered in your study, but it sure would be good for somehow that we get that information on the age of the pipes and the condition.
Okay, I'll put that in the mix, and if you or somebody else from the county legislature wants to be on our client committee, we'll be looking for someone.
Martha.
No, you're not looking for me to do that. Did you say the $40,000 was about half the cost of the study?
Yeah, the initial estimate, which was done about a year ago, was that we would be up to $75,000 for it, probably in that sort of $60,000 to $75,000. So I'm anticipating by now it'll be maybe up to $80,000. We want to kind of split it and probably be going to the IDA to request the other half.
Okay, and then the about how long do you think that it'll take?
Once we get going, I'm going to say 6 minimum, 9 months max probably.
6 to 9 months?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it possible, I really like what you said about sort of the system's communicating better. I'm thinking of Bolton Point communicating with a wastewater plant. Heather and I have talked about this a lot in relation to Ithaca Beer and the issue of, you know, a large water user should that has to get a permit to build or expand from the water plant. There should also be a connection to the sewage treatment so that they're not surprised later. Like, the water has to go somewhere. So I hope maybe that's a piece of it. You mentioned the ARC grant for the food BIP, and that reminded me of Southern Tier 8. One of the issues we have to decide on is whether to renew that again, that membership again. And you folks are a part of that. So I'm curious, it's not in here right now, but what's your experience? Do you think it's worthwhile? I think, Martha, you're going to those meetings. Is that right?
Yeah, I thought we were going to evaluate it next year. I haven't actually. I mean, I think that the plus side certainly right away is that, you know, before we were during the time that we were not having our membership, and we tried to apply for an ARC grant through Southern Tier 8, and, you know, they just really weren't very helpful. And now we're totally being helpful. And that's really an avenue to a certain chunk of federal funds that, while we technically could get them during that time we weren't members, I think that the just being connected and being part of that review committee and part of the group is certainly facilitates that. And I think we have 3 applicants in this year who sort of made it through the first filter and are heading hopefully towards, will get funded this year. I don't, you know, can't guarantee at this point, but I think that process is better involved with the energy study that they're doing in the 8 counties. Actually, they're probably benefiting a lot from our experience, more than we're going to benefit from being part of that study. But I think being part of that crew, you know, we'll see how much that benefits us.
Well, we are going to sort of fully evaluate it next year, but we, as a one-time expense, we have to, it comes up again, we have to vote on it again. Okay, thanks very much.
We have some more questions, but where are you with your presentation?
I'm finished.
Okay, then let's go to Anna.
Just one comment to follow up with Martha, what you just said, that what I've experienced in talking to my colleagues on SD8, it might not be direct because we're offering more, I think, in the energy sector, but having other counties pushing NYSEG in the similar vein that we are and pushing the state and educating the state might indirectly benefit our efforts. At least that's what I'm starting to see. So for what it's worth, it might be helpful to have 8 other county allies.
Martha, your tourism grant program that you administer, what is the tracking so that we know whether the money we're putting into that actually gives us more tourists?
Oh, you mean a direct connection between the investment in our tourism programs?
Any of that? Are we seeing increases of people coming to the different entities that we're granting money to?
Oh, to the specific places. Yes, I track. I ask them to fill in a form that's self-reported, and some of them clearly improve and some of them don't, and we've actually been more hesitant to give awards to the ones that are not improving and kind of talking often as a whole program, not just the tourism capital grants, but the tourism program in general, talking to some of those institutions and saying, how can we work with you to improve your marketing, to get more people there, what are the hurdles? And I find that actually, you know, the success with the capital grants is kind of similar with the other grant programs. I mean, some of these institutions come to all the 8 or so granting programs. And the overall tourism program, you know, did a big evaluation, I think about 2 or 3 years ago, where they looked at sort of all the grant histories and really dug in. There was a grad student who helped produce that. And along with the reporting that I asked them to do every year, you know, there are a few institutions that we said, you know, why aren't things kind of going better, and how can we work with you to improve that? So, yes, we do track, and the review committee sees that tracking and sees that evaluation and takes that into consideration when somebody comes and asks for money. But I would say there's been a big shift recently towards trails, which is a whole new area, and so I'm going to be really interested to start. We're going to try to do a program, I think, this coming year where we really work with those outdoor places that are hard to count, right? You have to go out and actually physically count or get counters out there on the trail and try to do some better tracking on the outdoor recreation, because that's a big push now.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you both for coming in tonight and helping us to understand your department and what you've been doing. And we always, it's always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, group, we are now 10 minutes behind. Rick Snyder, our Director of Assessment, is here.
Finance.
Director of Assessment. Director of Finance. Wrong department.
Is that a promotion?
Also
or
Drew.
To present our finance budget tonight and introduce those who did most of the work in putting this all together. You've already met Drew at a couple of our meetings. He seems to be a faithful attender. Drew Brayman is our deputy finance director here, and he helped coordinate this work this year, got thrown right into the middle of it when he was hired, and has helped us put this all together. I'd also like to introduce the staff that have come along tonight. First, it's Melanie Merriman, and she's worked on our budget for the treasury side. She's our treasury manager, and I wanted to especially thank her because this is her last budget that she's put together. Melanie will be retiring in March of next year after how many years? 32 years of service here with the county. We also have Lisa Hall on Melanie's left there, who is in our purchasing division. She's the one that does the bids and the quotes and all and specs and all those things for all the departments. Lisa has been here a good 32 years. But we hope to keep her for another year and a half or so. But, and then also to Melanie's right is Lisa Schott. And she also works in the treasuries, in the treasury division also. And she's been helping with the budget this year. So all these folks here have worked. This is the first time that the divisions each put their own budgets together in the system. So that gave a little bit more work to Kevin to work with three or four people instead of just one. So I just thought I would bring them along tonight, because you always ask a question I can't answer, and then they're here for that.
Thank you.
First, we're going to look at the money side of it. The expenditures are going from about $1.4 million to $1.5 million. A good portion of that is due to the OTRs, which we'll be talking about later. There's three OTRs in this presentation, and a portion of the OTRs, about $35,000 of that, is we're using our rollover monies to pay for that. Revenues are going up about $38,000, and the net local portion is about a $31,000 increase, or a 3% increase. These are the major initiatives that we'll be working on next year and the following years. I've asked my staff to put a list together, and when I gathered it all together, it would be about five screens, so I thought I would consolidate it and just talk about the highlights here. But this is a two-screen view that we'll be looking at. Most of our impetus in the next year or two will be training, because we have so many replacements, new staff members coming on board, new hires in the next year, some of them top management positions. I wanted the legislature to know that, and it's been talked about for the last 18 months or so, even when I spoke to them, spoke to a lot of you personally about that, that training is the bottom line on what we need to invest in as new employees come on board. Along with that training comes some more technological improvements in the software systems and the our ability to work with ITS on bringing new software platforms on board. That's why I've listed the first one here. It's been on our radar for at least 2 years, but we're still pushing forward to roll out a new electronic time and attendance system. We're hoping that that will take place this year and well into next year, and we're also looking at new payroll programs. That has to be coordinated, of course, with HR and ITS. So that's a tripartite commission. So if you want to look at it that way, that's moving that project forward. Some of the other software improvements that we're planning is a new P-card module for the purchasing card system. And as you know, we rolled out the new P-card about 18 months ago. There have been some hiccups with that. Some of the definitions of the reports and some of the clarity of the reports and the ease of use have not met our expectations. So we're looking at new software that runs with the P-card program that we now have, and that's one of our OTRs that you'll be seeing at the end of the presentation. That cost about $25,000. But remember, when we went with the P-card system, in our very first year, our savings due to rebates was $29,000. And that was just with a portion of the departments, not all the departments, playing along with the P-card yet. They hadn't all been trained and they hadn't been brought on board in 2018. In 2019, our rebate is projected to be $100,000. So making the investment in a $25,000 piece of software to help us move this forward and work out some of the wrinkles, I think, is a great investment. Drew has already looked into some of the different options that are out there, and we're working on that right now. Training and support for eFinance Plus, our financial software, that's had many names over the year, from Pentimation to SunGuard to eFinance Plus to Central Square. I think they change their name every year because they're always getting bought up. But we need some more training. A lot of it's due to the new staff and people being promoted either laterally or upward in our organization. And so we also want to be able to use the project accounting module a little bit differently and a little bit more advanced. So we need to invest and provide more training for the existing software that we now have, and that's our eFinance Plus software. We also would like to have some more training and a higher level of support for QuickBooks. And you think, QuickBooks? What do we use QuickBooks for? Well, apart from the county's main software system, we also use QuickBooks to do the financial reporting for the health insurance consortium, which there's one other staff member that works on that in my department. Drew, part of his time is invested in the health insurance consortium and a part of my time. So that's one of the elements that we'd like to delve into a little bit deeper is QuickBooks as we continue to be the money managers for the health insurance consortium. Staff training positions that have recently been filled or that are opening up, Deputy Director of Finance, that's Drew. Continual training for that. The whole direction that I wanted Drew to be going in when we first hired him has completely changed since his second week on board because, as you know, the Director of Accounting Services left about 3 weeks after Drew came on board, and so he and I have been filling that role, and that's very time-consuming. So we'll eventually get Drew back to, I hope, at some point, with some of the projects and things that we originally envisioned for him to be working on. But with a new deputy director, we also will be hiring very soon now a new director of accounting services. Those interviews we finished up and wrapped up last week. We're making a selection right now this week. References are being checked. We should have an acceptance of an offer hopefully by the end of this week, beginning of next week. I'll keep you posted on that. And sadly to say, with Melanie leaving, she did give us a year's notice, so it afforded us a chance to do some very creative and adaptive succession planning, and I really love the way she's worked with her staff and that we've already made some changes there. But due to the treasury manager position opening up, that resulted in one of the OTRs that we're suggesting tonight, and that's just to have some dual coverage as we invest in the next person who will be taking that position. And of course, the traditional and ongoing cross training that we sorely need to improve upon so that all our staff members are being relied upon to do the jobs of others when people are out sick or vacation or if they leave the organization. Second screen here lists numbers 4, 5, and 6. I continued on with some more training and documentation needs. These are the things that, although they're not specific to individuals in our organization, these are elements that we need training in that go all throughout the finance organization. We need to stay focused with the state OSC trainings. The state comptroller offers a lot of webinars. They offer seminars, a lot of things that are for free. And I want to get more of the staff and the online staff involved in these very useful training sessions. As Maureen said earlier, we use LaserFiche. We constantly send our employees to that type of training, both local here when it's offered locally and sometimes far away. So we always manage to send a couple employees to LaserFiche. E-Finance Plus, Excel, Office, all those things we've had for years, that's our finance system and the products that we use each and every day. One of the things I've found is that I've had employees, some have worked with us for years, and they've never had any formal training on some of these products. We just pick up stuff and learn as we go, and we pick up things we brought with us from other jobs that we've had. But we like to have a bit more focus so that every staff member gets a piece of the training pie. External sites, Drew reminded me of this. We do business with so many outside organizations like the FAA with the airport grants, and a lot of purchasing and compliance things. What are all these acronyms? SOAR, SAM, ECHO, CATS. These are all online programs that one, two, or three of us in the finance department have to be learned in so that we can log on to these sites and do whatever it is that we're supposed to be doing. The SOAR system and the SAM system might have to do with airport purchasing. ECHO is for federal grant drawdowns so that we can get the money that the federal government is sending to us. CATS is the financial system that we have to report the airport finances into at the end of the year. So they're all fairly sophisticated online programs that you need to have hopefully more than one staff member. I don't want to be the only one that knows how to work on these. I want to have two or three different staff members that are well-trained and versed in each of these external site programs. The RBA program, you've heard every department talk about that with performance measures. This is our first year in that. We're on the third team or the third and last group that have been going through the RBA program. I know that the finance staff have formed a team to come up with those performance measures. They were working on that just this week. I know that we'll be meeting with Dave and the fellow from, what's the name of the organization that's coming in October?
Yeah, I don't recall.
One of the folks that's going to help us put the finishing touches on our suggested performance measures. So we are in that last group, and we just started that effort this year to come up with our finance performance measures. Lastly, continue working on policies and procedures. That's both the administrative policies that need updating, like you're familiar with the procurement policy that we brought to you a couple months ago. There's still quite a few of those that finance needs to be working on. And locally, the procedures for amongst our different staff workers, the actual work routine procedures. We're constantly trying to fulfill that need to complete those and to revise those. This is the full-time equivalents. The reason why you see it go up just a little bit, we haven't really changed the roster. There are a couple tweaks to it. The reason why you see 13 to 13.2 is because of the dual coverage that we're recommending for about a 10 or 11 week period in the new year. It'll actually start later in this year in November as we have a dual position for the treasury manager's position, Melanie's position. So we're hoping to have dual coverage from around mid-November to the first week of March. So if that's approved, that's what accounts for the 0.2. This is our rollover requests. Originally, we all put them in as target requests. Administration had us go back and look closely at our rollover. They said, you've got rollover dollars. We could more easily probably put these forward if you use some of your rollover dollars. The first one there is staffing for retirement. We just got done saying that we're going to have dual coverage for the treasury manager position for a 10 or 11 week period in the new year. That we can use rollover dollars for, and that costs $10,350. That includes coverage for that position and the fringes. The second one is a target request increase of $16,745, staffing to 40 hours for two positions. There are two positions in the accounting division right now that a principal account clerk and a account clerk. And both of those positions are at 35 hours a week. We'd like to upgrade that to 40 hours a week. We're in need of doing that desperately right now. We're going to try to afford to do that within the existing year budget. But this is to increase those two positions from 35 hours a week to 40 hours a week. We spoke with both employees. They're both agreeable to that. Both of those employees have been there around 3 years, and I don't even remember why we put them from 40 hours to 35 hours in the first place when we did this 3 or 4 years ago. I know that we were going through a retooling at the time, and we were trying to get as many positions filled as possible, and I think we were downgraded some of the positions and we cut the hours back at that time, but we could really use that full coverage 40 hours on those two accounting type positions. And that, of course, would be a target request. Should the legislature choose to meet this request and fill it, that would include the amount of a pay increase plus fringes for both of those folks moving to 40 hours. The very last one is, again, being paid totally out of rollover funds, and that's $25,000, just an estimate for the new purchasing card module that I talked about a little bit earlier. And it could be a little bit more, it could be a little bit less, but based on some preliminary fact-finding, that was the best estimate that we could come up with at that time. And that is the end of my presentation. I'll take any questions that you may have.
Start with Glenn.
We don't have a P-card program?
Yes, we do have a P-card program for the last 18 months, and we rolled it out slowly, and we have had some hiccups with it, and some of the reporting is not to our liking. It doesn't always... it doesn't show you the vendor where it's supposed to show the vendor, which makes it hard for referencing back. And the P-card, as far as the bank has rolled it out, is working fine. That program does work. But this is an interface that's part, it could very well be part of our finance product that we're now using. This extra module will make it easier for the end user to use. And if you've ever heard some of the flack that comes back from all the other departments, even though we're saving money and we can say that we do a lot less purchase orders now, we do a lot less accounts payable checks, it's actually more work at the department level. Like, there is usually a finance liaison person at each department that actually has more work to do as a result of them buying more stuff on the P-card. And so this is meant to help speed that out, make it more efficient and easier to use.
Do you have a rebate program on the P-card?
Excuse me?
Do you have a rebate program on the P-card?
Yes, the rebate program. That was the whole issue 18 months ago when we went through committee. We did an RFP. We got responses, and we got good responses from a lot of leading banks. And we chose at that time 18 months ago, to go with a new bank that offered a P-card program with a floating rebate. That means, I forget what we got last year as a percent. Do you remember, Lisa? But it, as the volume goes up, you go from 0.5% to 0.75% to 0.5% on all your purchases for the year. You get one check at the end of the year. And last year, our first year of implementation, we made $29,000 in rebate. And that was just for 8 months with less than half of the departments using it. This year, with all the departments using it and with a full year, we're estimating it to be $90,000 to $100,000 in rebates.
Ann?
Thank you. So I had a couple of questions. I was also going to ask about the P-card, but that makes sense to me now, an extra module that you're getting with that. But I still have two questions. So one is with the laser fiche art, do you have a lot of outstanding records that need to be put on there?
We have some that are out there. They've come a long ways in the last couple of years, and it is taking some time. What we really would like to address is, now that the records are out there, how can we better organize them and get access to them? When our auditors are in from outside, they access those records, and it could be more efficient for their use. Also, we're starting to identify a few of our processes that could be made much more efficient by use of the laser fiche, if it'll work for those processes. So by getting staff more trained and more familiar with the product, we can be utilizing it more. You heard, I think, during this year that we went to the residency certificates online. That's where the college students from the New York State can come in and prove their residency, and they get the lower tuition. That is actually operating online. We're one of the first counties, or the first county, to offer residency certificates through an online process, and that is based through the laser fiche software. So, you know, for us to be able to identify projects like that, that'll save, you know, taxpayers and constituents coming in. Oftentimes we find these youngsters that are 18, 19 years old aren't familiar with everything they have to do, so it's much easier for them to submit it online. We kick it back, tell them, oh, can you add this, this, and this? And then they resubmit online, and then they get their certificate online, and it goes automatically to the colleges. So that's working wonderfully and saving oftentimes two or three trips to the county offices.
Okay, great. And have one comment and then one last question. I just wanted to thank Melanie, all your departments, but also especially Melanie, thank you for your 2 years of service, and let us know when you're having your vegan cake for your retirement, and we'll be right there. Gluten-free, right, Anna? Your vegan gluten-free cake.
Absolutely.
And so I'm glad to see that you're working on, the staffing to help transition for people to retire. And do you have you're filling one department head, do you have many vacancies in other areas?
Right now, there's the Director of Accounting Services, which we hope to have a name before you in the next week or so. That point will be totally and fully staffed.
A long time.
But then Melanie starts it up again with her leaving in March. We have some succession planning going on behind the scenes, and there'll be some lateral moves, probably promotion. I don't want to say too much right now, but we kind of have a plan in place that will, as those individuals move throughout our department, there will be a vacancy, of course, in one of those positions come March, and so we'll be looking to fill that at that time.
Thank you.
Martha.
I'm a dummy on this. Who gets the rebates? Where does that go? Is that what? You get.
Did you see that new car?
No wonder you approved the OP. No, so does that? What is that, just like a cash back that goes to the whoever charged it, or how's it work?
Our plan and what we told the department is that they're each going to get an allocable portion back based on their percentage, on their percentage of volume. In fact, last year's check, as we got it, we still haven't allocated it back yet. That's on our to-do list. It's still sitting in a clearing account right now. There are a couple departments who have serious concerns about getting it back. They don't want to get the rebate back because it would really screw up their state and federal reporting because of the reimbursements and blah, blah, blah. You know how that goes.
Jason will take it off their hands.
And so there are a few departments who have opted out of the rebate program because it's more work than it is helpful when they have to go back and reclassify grant reimbursements. But for the most part, the short answer is yes, the departments will be getting that cut back.
Okay. And then is this a module that you just get once and then you keep it, or is it a license that's annual?
What we are looking at is probably a one-time purchase, but it will have an annual fee associated with it, and I did build that into our annual fee budget as well.
Okay, got it. And I think this is a Kevin question. On the rollover, since they're talking about rollover here, I went to the rollover page in Section 2, and it looks like last year, you got a big recommendations pending, and I don't see anything for 2020 in here.
Yeah, I used that as a placeholder until I could process the rollover submissions. The timing of the rollover availability to departments this year was such that it fell right as we were in the middle of budget conversations, and then we hit the sprint from there to printing the budget. So Jason and I sat down and worked through the bulk of them and have recommendations to plug into that table for you. There are a couple of stragglers that I'm still processing, and I may have that for you tomorrow, Thursday night.
Okay, great. I just wasn't sure if I was looking in the wrong place or something.
No, it's just a loose end.
All right, thank you.
Any more questions for finance? I would just say, Rick, I really appreciate your effort at training and cross-training that you're talking about doing next year. I just wonder how you're going to manage to do it and still keep everything going and with all your employees. How will they do that? You take one at a time and send them somewhere, or how are we going to do that?
Well, most of them are pretty aggressive, and now that they know that training dollars are available, you remember when we spoke personally as a group on goals, my goals going for personal goals for the department that I think it was 2 years in a row I brought to your attention. I would not rest until I knew I had every staff member having some degree of training. You know, gone are the days where the finance director gets the whole budget and goes to three things a year and nobody else goes anywhere at any time. And I want to make sure that every staff member has some training, whether it's free training on a webinar or whether it's a local luncheon to network with their peers. Drew is going to belong to the same organizations that I belong to as we get a little bit further down the road. The division heads and managers will all be more responsible for going to more conferences and seminars. So not every staff person will get the same level or dollars of training, but according to their responsibility in our department, everyone's going to have a piece of the training pie. And I think that takes some of the strain off of just us trying to teach them how to do their job on a 8-to-5, 5-day-a-week type basis.
Okay, good luck with it.
Thank you.
Appreciate your coming in tonight.
Thank you.
We go next to Kathy Covert, who is our clerk of the legislature. And we are... We're 20 minutes behind now. Not time for a break yet. You want a break? We generally do a break after 2 hours.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm going to present both the legislature and the clerk of the legislature's budget. This is the slide that you've been seeing on all the budgets. It shows the expenditures, the revenues, which is actually our rollover, and then the net local share. This is the full-time equivalents. As you can see, it increases from 17 to 18 for 2020, the number of employees.
Remember, 14 of those are us.
Yes, sure. So I have two OTRs in the budget that have been recommended by the county administrator. The first OTR is a creation of a position for succession planning, and I'll also be requesting the use of rollover for equipment, computer equipment and furnishings. And then there's also a one-time request for membership for National Association of Counties, and I'll let Jason speak to that when the time comes. So the major influence for the request to create a position is we have two long-term employees retiring in 2 to 4 years come 2020. We've already started planning, streamlined procedures, and exploring technical options to make the responsibilities less reliant on institutional knowledge. I think it is unprecedented that two-thirds of the legislature staff will be retiring in that time frame. Like I said, we have taken steps to transition. We've transitioned to a paperless office, done some cross-training, and developed systems that are not dependent on one individual. We do use laser fiche that was mentioned under Rick's presentation. I know I've mentioned this before, we want to move to an electronic program to manage the appointments to advisory boards and replace the manual system that we currently have. Having a fourth position, I feel, you know, has some benefits. It'll allow us to expand and optimize the meeting management program and provide more assistance to departments, which we find that there's a need for that. There are a number of actions that if not taken in a timely manner, can have consequences. Renewing the 1% sales tax extension, processing home rule legislations and local laws, and compliance with the open meetings law. It's also important for this individual that we hope to hire to be familiar with Robert's rules, county policies, the rules of the legislature, code of ethics, the charter, local laws, and appointments. And another thought I had today with the hiring of a person next year is the census and redistricting process will be underway, and I think, you know, that's every 10 years. I think that would be very important, and also the 1% sales tax extension expires next year. So that's a multi-step process, requires home rule legislation. So bringing someone in, I think at that time, would be very helpful. And I guess with that, well, maybe I should ask Jason to address the NACO OTR.
I'd be happy to. Stoke with Steve Aquarius over at NYSNAC over the past summer. You know, NYCO provides a significant amount of information, a lot of things I think that we would find valuable. Being a member can open the door to that. Also, I know NYSAC wants to partner with NACO to do some lobbying in D.C. this year, particularly around climate and environmental concerns. I think they would like us to join them for that, if possible. And in order to do that, we would have to be NACO members. So I spoke to him a little bit about it. He encouraged it. A few times when I spoke to him, he brought it up a few more times, and I said, I'll float it to the legislature and see if there's some interest, at least try it for a year or two and see if we get benefit from it. It wasn't a terribly expensive membership, I'm recommending it.
I'll just add that it's in our budget because the membership dues for NYSAC is in our budget.
We have Anna and Amanda.
I wanted to say, one, that no, you aren't allowed to retire. Despite that, that I'm not king of the hill and can't dictate that. I wish I could. The one thing I want to say is obviously thank you. And two, that if anyone ever thinks that they have any comprehensive grasp of what you do, then they're wrong, because I just every 2 seconds am realizing that there's like an infinite number of things behind the scenes that you are doing, and I can't believe that you've done it actually this long with three people. I, for example, didn't know that this wasn't our video recording system internally, but you control that all with like your fingers behind while you're also doing everything else somehow. So infinite things. So thank you, and I certainly thank you for supporting it. Absolutely. And the only question I have about it is, where are they going to sit?
I think, Kathy, we had talked about maybe there's some room up.
Yes, there is, up in the balcony.
Wow.
Can be a designated office space.
Okay, Amanda?
Sure. I have two questions. One is, thank you, Kathy. One is actually probably for Jason on the fringe benefits page. Why would that have gone down?
Sorry, let me pull it out.
Page 126.
Six.
It went down by 10,000.
From 152 to 149?
Yeah, 252.
I'm sorry, 252.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact answer to that, but there could have been someone that shifted health insurance. That could have been the reason why. We can dig into it a little bit more, because it does. Kevin, do you know exactly why?
Our fringe rate went down.
Oh, where our fringe rate went down.
So in small departments where the overall growth in wages wasn't very large, the decline in fringe rate really shows up. Against a larger payroll in a larger department, you don't see it, but it makes a difference.
Okay, cool. Thank you. And then my second question is for my fellow GEO people. And we had talked about the NACO membership, and I can't really remember what we decided, or I don't know. I can't remember.
Dan?
We took a look at it, and we just decided not to join at that time. We didn't see a big benefit.
Okay.
I think we said it also that perhaps if there was a representative from NACO that might come and talk to us, we'd be glad to listen to them.
Okay. Thank you.
I can tell you just the difference from then to now was my discussion with Steve, the director for NYSAC, about their interest in doing lobbying at D.C., but that's just the major difference in the discussion I had with them about it. But I can definitely.
They don't want to pay our dues, do they?
I'm sorry?
They don't want to pay our dues, do they?
No, they don't. But I can talk to Steve to see if there's a representative if the legislature wants to meet with someone.
Martha.
A couple of things, but about that, Annie and Deborah and I went to Washington last August, a year ago August, and NACO was very supportive in that and helped organize the day and gave us an opportunity, sort of orientation the night before, and helped us out. And then in January, I was in NYSAC asked me to do a conference in Washington, and NACO helped me the following day to set up meetings and participated in one or two of them as well. So I think we underestimate that. I mean, we're close enough to Washington to do that. It's like we're not out in the West Coast or something. So we might be able to benefit more than we have thought of before. We think of going to Washington, to Albany to lobby, et cetera, but Washington is, you know, it might be, there might be some real opportunity there. And, you know, if Steve has sort of identified that, then I think it's worth thinking about. And as you said, it's not a lot of money. I was wondering about the travel and training budget, Kathy. We've got in 2019, for this year, we bumped it up to $10,000 for the legislature's travel. And I think you said for the fall conference next week, we're going to run out of money. Is that right?
I think we'll have maybe $200 to $400 left in that account.
Just skimming it in there. Okay, so do you think we ought to add something to that again? I mean, that's pretty close. Or we can always go to the contingent fund if somebody wants to go to something.
I think that's a decision of the legislature.
Okay, so at this point, we're just going to, like, just about make it.
Correct.
Okay, that's good. And the balcony for the person who would be the fourth person. The balcony. I know we've had concerns about that's not an accessible space.
Right.
Can we do that? And I know if it would be temporary, and also Michelle has talked about she works at home already a lot.
It's going to require some flexibility and creativity. You know, it could be anyone's office, really. So there'll be, I think, a lot of office sharing because, you know, with the succession planning, there's going to be a lot of shadowing. And so.
Okay. And then the other little bit of a sticky question has to do with actual succession planning for your position, which has to go to a county resident.
Correct.
So is that part of, I mean, we're literally looking for the person who will take your job, right?
Or Michelle.
No, Michelle doesn't have to be a county resident, the deputies,
correct.
But
well, we'll both be retiring within the next 4 years, so both positions will be.
Okay, so if the person is not a county resident, they could go into Michelle's slot, which is actually the first retirement
and
anyway.
And if interested, move into the county. Or
right,
too, because Katrina is doing research. She doesn't live in the county.
Correct.
Okay. All right, so since Michelle is actually the first one retiring, this is not too awkward. Okay. Thank you for helping me think out loud. Thank you for listening.
And fine.
So are we adding a position until someone retires and then going back down to three positions, or are we adding four permanently?
This request is one time, but as I understand from the county administrator, it's a three-year one time.
Yes, three-year one time.
And I think at that time it can be revisited and see what our need is.
Three-year one time. Isn't it? It's listed in Target here, I think.
It was requested at Target, and I'm recommending it as a three-year one time.
I'm sorry, can you say that? So it's not in Target at this time?
It is not in Target. Okay. It was requested as Target. I'm recommending it as a three-year one time. With the likelihood, depending on, retirement span from 2 to 4 years, it may be possible that may have to be revisited for, another one time. Yeah. This could be 3 to 5 years in terms of succession. I will say, because of the uniqueness of the positions, both Michelle and Kathy's positions, when we do succession planning, it's usually for several months, half a year. This 2 to 3, maybe 4 year overlap is probably it's a unique position. They're both unique positions. It's well overdue in terms of that type of overlap, just to have that amount of exposure to different nuances of this type of work.
This might be a Kevin question. So on this sheet, the big OTR sheet, that OTR request is in blue. It's listed as modified, and it's listed in Target. I assume that meant what it shows up in the sheet, it's been what's modified to, not what's modified from. So I'm just trying to make sure I understand, so that when I look at the other requests, I'll understand what I'm looking at.
Yeah, that yes, you're reading it right, that it's modified. And if you follow across, you'll see that it was requested in the requested block, the vertical block entitled requested, the $82,555 shows up in the levy or target column. If you then move to your right in the recommended column, you'll see that in the recommendation area, it's being paid for with one-time funds.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That helps.
Thanks.
Anne?
My question was answered.
Anna?
Thank you, Dan, for catching that one time. I just wanted a quick follow-up from Kathy. Were you recommending it as a target because you think that having four people would be a good idea long-term?
It's difficult to answer that question. I don't know. It's going to depend on the individuals that come in. And
I guess I'm not just getting a sense of what your thought process was, because I know you're very efficient as a team right now, and so it's hard to say because you're capable of doing it now. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what the logic was of putting it in as target.
I guess I was looking at... out for the future of the office. I didn't want to say it was my decision that the office needed four positions. When I became clerk, it was a four-person office. So I don't know. Okay. It's difficult to answer that question.
I think Kathy said earlier that if it went to the three-year one-times, the three one-years, it could be looked at again at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
But certainly, if a person is put into that position, they've got to feel that they're going to stay with us or that they're going to have to leave if we do it on a one-time, three times.
Well, and I think about the institutional knowledge, that Michelle and I have, and, things are at our fingertips, and you're not going to have that, and it's going to take someone a lot longer.
More than 3 years, probably.
You know, so I guess, you know, that was in the back of my mind when I requested Target. And
Martha.
Yeah, the question is, I mean, I think, you know, a potential 3, maybe even 4 year overlap is that's a long time. And there's also, you know, you're talking about streamlining and making more things sort of automatic, mm-hmm. that you don't have to just remember that you do this every January or that every November. I think 3 years is certainly a good commitment to somebody who's going to apply to this. And it's not like we're not sure we're going to need the third person. We're clearly going to need that person to stay. So sort of the question is, would we need to ramp it up to a fourth person? So this seems like a good strategy. In other words, we're not committing at this moment that we know what it's going to look like in 4 years.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you very much, Kathy. Thank you, Jason. We've got two more departments. Emergency response is next, and we are still 20 minutes behind. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you. Be glad to make up that 20 minutes if you'd like.
Well, I don't know if you can. It seems to be related to the questions.
Seems how we have 20 minutes. Thank you for allowing us to present the emergency response budget this evening. I've brought Deputy Director Jess Verfus with me. It's a pleasure to do this, although I must say I'm a bit sad and maybe a little jealous that I'm not able to sit out there with you folks. I really liked going to like 3 meetings a week for all fall and no longer able to do that.
You're welcome to come and sit out there.
We've got seats for you, Brian. Right here.
Our recommended budget. Most of the changes, percentage changes, the dollar changes speak to our major influences and our OTRs. I guess I can start with surcharges. We do anticipate lower revenue from our landline surcharges. As people age out, they get rid of their landlines, and the surcharge money has been dwindling. So we saw some of it this year, and we're anticipating a $50,000 reduction in landline surcharges. I will point out that through the efforts of many people in this room, we were able to keep the cellular phone surcharges, which had we not been able to do that, we calculated that it would be roughly a $180,000 additional reduction in surcharge revenue. And I know a lot of people had a lot to do with that. We thank our representatives in state government for supporting us, and we now have another 10 years of that local law, which is a good thing for our local budgets. One of the expenditures that the county administrator spoke to you about early on in this process was a plain $50,000 addition to our renewal and replacement line in the budget. Most of that is grant funded. Some of it was used, frankly, for operational costs, which we felt was a dangerous thing to do because, as we all know, grant funding can go away, and that would create a deficit right off the bat in terms of budgeting. So we're trying to move away from that. I think we are trying to get to a point where we're adding $50,000 per year for the next several years until we reach a comfortable number of $700,000 in that renewal and replacement line. And trust me, we have plenty to spend that on, which I'll get to here in a bit. The first one dealing with revenues we just spoke about. As far as our expenses, if you recall last year, there were several OTRs as far as a departmental reorganization that are just now hitting this budget, which reflect changes within the office. There were several new positions. There were positions eliminated, new positions created, and position upgrades, and just a basic reorganization of the department. Also, along with OTRs, we're talking about our service contract increases. We have 22, I believe, service contracts ranging from just a few thousand dollars to we have one that's $700,000 a year with Motorola for our communication system. And all of them seem to go up every year. And if you think about it, it's no different than our own workforce. It's labor costs for our service contract companies. And, you know, they seem to go up basically by the cost of living every year. And it's a tough thing to put into your budget without asking for an over-target request. And it's kind of caught up with us at this point. I spoke of the renewal and replacement account only because we are at a point within our department that a lot of the equipment that we have from the build-out of our communication center is reaching end of life and needs to be replaced. First up on the list is our microwave communication system. We've been meeting all year with engineers from Motorola. We can no longer get parts a lot of times. We have a communication system that we do not want to get to the point where we're basically operating with, you know, duct tape and bubble gum to keep that. If our communications system goes down, that is a bad day for everyone. It's time to be replaced, and we've been meeting regularly on that, and I am hopeful that we can get started soon so that we don't run into a situation where our system is down and not able to be fixed. With that, and there are other projects behind that, major projects behind it. And as such, if we can switch to our OTRs. Well, first full-time equivalent is the first OTR. That's the only change in that. So we may as well just go right to the OTR. That is for a project manager, not only for the microwave system project, but as I said, for the ones that we hope to follow. That will be a full-time job, not only with the projects that we currently have going, but with the capital projects that we'll be embarking on as well. And the second one I spoke of earlier, which is the service contract increases. So I saved about 15 minutes.
For that. Questions? Martha.
Hey, Brian. Jess, hello. So I'm looking at the description of the OTR for the project manager. That's page 68. It says, this function is currently being performed by the Assistant Director of Emergency Response Dispatch Operations position that was eliminated in the 2019 budget process.
Yes.
I don't understand.
The funding was there to keep him there because of some of the reorganization from last year and the positions that were not filled yet in the budget.
Okay.
It was a savings. We have filled one of them. The community preparedness coordinator position was filled in June, and that person is now up and running. So we didn't pay for that position for the first half of the year, which allowed the other director to stay there. The other savings came from. The former director has stayed on a half-time basis, and so obviously there's a cost savings there as well. He is going to continue to stay on until his retirement date next spring, at which time we will then fill the fire disaster and EMS coordinator position that he is currently doing.
He's doing fire and EMS coordinator?
Yes.
Okay. So if I understand, then you're saying you've got somebody doing this project manager work now, and this is another year of one time to finish through some of these projects?
Yeah. The projects, the backlog of projects that we had to begin with, and these capital projects that are coming.
Okay, so we have somebody in the slot now.
Yes.
This is who?
We have someone filling this role right now. It's okay. Brian Wilbur.
This is Brian Wilbur. Okay.
Yes.
And this is full time?
Yes.
So he'll continue for one more year on this.
He has committed to manage these upcoming capital projects, yes.
Okay. And you think one year will be enough, or?
We'll start there.
Start there. Okay. And then I was...
yeah.
All right. I must have missed something you said. You were talking about using grant monies for operations, and you're trying to increase target $50,000 a year to sort of catch up. Did you say there was $700,000, a gap of $700,000 in the operating budget that was being filled by...
No, not that much, no.
Okay, how much was that?
It was like $150,000 or okay. $200,000. And when we talked about it during budget retreat is every year taking $100,000 out and making sure we're committing it to the capital account and not using it to fund operations.
Okay. Is that in one of these lines?
I don't think it's actually written in any of this. We did it. It was built into the – after the budget retreat, it was built into the budget retreat. And then what we would do is next year we would decrease the reliance on that grant in the operating budget, another 50 grand and so on. I think it was 150, so we might have two more years of this. And that will be committed solely to what he's calling the repair and replacement or the capital commitment. You know, this funding can be committed to capital improvements, which will support this microwave upgrade, which is about, I want to say, 1.8, 1.9 million.
1.8, yeah.
And then you've got the backup dispatch center and some other system upgrades that can range between 2 to 6.5 million, depending on where we go with it. When we did the capital plan, we anticipated bonding out the backup dispatch center center costs possibly, and that this grant would be able to pay for that over the amortization of it, because you get it every, you're getting it every year to help support your basically your system and your network. So that's the goal of the plan right now. And I think after this next year of evaluating the backup dispatch center options, we'll probably have more as to where we're going to head towards the end of next year.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And I just really think somebody ought to speak up and support bubble gum. So and duct tape. So
paper clips.
Right. Yeah.
I'm doing my part. No.
Okay. Thank you.
Dan.
As part of the reorganization, there's going to be a new position coming on that I don't remember the title of the position, but it's going to part of the function is to support the EMS system through recruitment and training of EMS personnel through the county.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that, about when that's coming? And
yeah, there's actually a couple of different fronts with that. That will fall under the Fire Disaster and EMS Coordinator to do the recruitment. There's also a $25,000 grant that's been out there for actually a couple of years now, supporting those efforts. And we've been working with TC3 to offer a certified first responder course. They actually attempted to kick it off last month, but were unable to, but they certainly haven't given up on the endeavor. And it's all part of their adult ed. We're trying to team with them to be able to get more first responders out there, and hopefully that becomes a feeder for, you know, EMS folks to get into paramedics and EMTs, that sort of thing. It's certainly an issue. I don't think we're as bad here in Tompkins County as it is in other places in the state. But it's something that's certainly on the radar, and we want to do whatever it is we can. I guess I would say, in addition to this, these two positions that were created from last year, we're committed to doing things a bit differently. And you know, we have our consumers. Most of them are law enforcement agencies, fire departments, ambulance squads, and so forth. And we support them. And before, we wanted them to come to us to tell them how it was we could help them. Well, I think we figured out that these folks are busy, and they're not going to come to us. So we need to go to them. So you need to get out of the office, and you need to go to where they are at times that they are. So, for instance, a fire and EMS coordinator, instead of sitting in the office, will need to go to an evening fire department meeting and say, here we are. Now we've got a face-to-face. Tell us how we can help you.
Just last night responded to a fire.
Right. Yeah.
Did you say, though, that the fire and EMS coordinator is the person you see taking a lot of that responsibility?
Yes.
And is that currently Brian Wilbur?
No.
It's a different position.
Yes.
And this position is not hired yet? Is that correct?
Lee Shurtleff is filling that role.
Lee is filling it.
Yes.
And he'll be doing it until the spring.
He'll be doing it until we can fill that position on a full-time basis.
He's currently doing it part-time.
Do you have a timeline for that, or a guesstimated timeline?
I think he's scheduled to retire in April.
Yes.
And again, we have budget constraints. I'd like to hire that person today, but we can't. But I foresee where with some cost savings that we have from him working part-time into next year, that roughly the end of February, I would like to have somebody full-time in that position.
Thank you.
But Lee, to his credit, was one of the driving forces behind this arrangement that we do have with TC3 currently.
Thank you.
Leslie.
So Dan's line of questioning was clarifying a little bit for me. Thank you, Dan. But I think I need a little more clarification. So the kind gentleman, Mr. Wilbur's position, I remember Brian coming in as a stopgap measure a few years ago for something or the other, I don't remember. And I thought that was done. But it seems like he's transitioned into something else. Is that what's going on?
It's since I got there in January, it has.
I see. It has what? He's transitioned into doing something else as opposed to his position?
Yeah, his position was eliminated in last year's budget.
Right.
However, the people that were in those positions were allowed to remain into those positions until the new positions were filled.
So, okay, now I thought I'd gotten it when Dan had asked there, but no, I don't think I got it anymore.
Hang on. Since then, we've identified basically the capital projects that need to happen, and he is the person with the institutional knowledge to be able to manage those projects, and he has agreed to do so. I think he really wanted to retire, but but we need, quite frankly, we need someone with his knowledge and of his caliber to be able to manage these and speak with engineers and contractors and the like.
Which is why it's a one-time. It's extended.
Yes.
And does anybody remember the name of the former systems manager of the systems guy?
You mean Jack Miller?
Check. Yeah, Jack. Jack. So I'm not sure what your problem is, but Jack did this on stick, twine, and bubblegum. So
right.
I don't know what's with all this money asking for. He held it together.
He
we had a perfect
million.
System.
I actually asked him about that.
Yeah.
I saw Jack, and he was fresh
out. He didn't even have Gorilla Tape, man, and it worked. So stop with the asking for more money.
Did you want to clarify something, Jason? Then go to Shauna, then.
I'm set. Thank you. I'm good, thank you.
Oh, all right. Anyone else? Thank you both. Appreciate it. And unfortunately, we've lost 2 minutes. We're about 22 minutes behind. What's the pleasure of the group? It would be normally, it would be break time, but we have one more department.
Oh, go. Finish.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Move it through?
Yes.
All right.
Actually,
go ahead, Brian.
I was asked shortly before the meeting, there was a question on revenue from tower sites?
Yesterday.
From last night?
Yes. Last night the question came up, yes.
Okay. And specifically, what was the question? Because I have the information, I believe, right in front of me.
So I was interested in finding out if we were still getting revenues from the telephone companies that were using our tower sites, and to what level are we getting it? How much?
In 2018, it was not to the penny, but it was we received approximately $90,000 in revenue from several cellular providers. Last year, we actually added one mid-year, so that was adjusted this year, and we have a anticipated revenues this year of $132,000 from them.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. Let's get with the public.
While we're waiting, do we have the card from Pat for Pat Pryor? Is that, did that get to you?
Yeah, handed to you.
It's been sitting at my
desk. Okay.
I apologize.
If there, anybody else hasn't signed that card, let's all pass it down.
Last but not least, we have Tompkins Community Action. Lee Dillon.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Good evening.
Thank you very much. My name is Lee Dillon. I'm the executive director at Tompkins Community Action, and Danielle Harrington is with us tonight as the, and she is our housing services director.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for this opportunity for us to show off a little bit. Let's see, do I know how to do this? Yes. Because it was an item of community concern, I'm pleased to say that we are finalizing our union negotiations with the Painters Union, District Council Number 4. We continue to be a living wage provider of 110 employees, and we offer health, dental, retirement benefits, and have a very generous leave package. In 2019, the Board of Directors and staff are celebrating 53 years of dedicated service to Tompkins County residents. We want to thank you so much for last year's $65,000 OTR for furnishings for the community spaces at Amici House. And I look forward to showing that to you at our open house on October 18th, 2019. We just received the go-ahead from our capital funders, and you will receive an invitation very soon. Our community partners are using the Amici community spaces and are very comfortable and happy to be able to have on-site access to young households 18 to 25 years of age and their children. We have found that bringing services and other types of support to residents is more powerful and engaging than transporting residents to the services. We have a community office set up for the Learning Web and are hopeful that other community partners groups will find a dedicated office space useful. Many residents continue their relationship with the web, and we welcome their participation. The community partners that have already used the beautiful community rooms at Amici, Workforce New York Learning Labs, Census 2000 recruiters, public health nurses who deliver information, conduct HIV testing, blood pressure monitoring, and hand out condoms. TST BOCES, informational meetings about GED study groups, and our soon-to-be nutritional educational series, information and planning meetings, and we have more plans to include others. Danielle, do you want to discuss our relationship with the Ithaca Police Department?
Sure. So since we've opened in February, we've had some IPD presence, both in response to emergency situations and also them just popping in, working on a community policing relationship, you know, little badge stickers to the kids, talking to parents, becoming more of a less traumatic presence when they roll up to the building. It doesn't have to mean that something terrible is happening. So we're hoping that eventually they'll have a satellite office at Amici House, possibly. Like I said, they pop in every now and then. Staff find that reassuring. The residents are getting used to it. People are learning each other's names. It's been quite positive.
The officers have been very respectful to the young people.
Yeah.
I think I'm the only one that used major influences tonight as a way to show off. I think that you all have copies of this, and so I'm not going to read this to you, but we have remarkable outcomes to present because of our fantastic caring staff. The numbers of people we served this year were less than last time we met due to the closure of our food pantry during construction. There was no safe way to enter the building. However, we are now open, and in July and August, we served over 300 individuals in need of food. Our pantry is open Tuesdays from 1 to 4, and we are not geographically limited, only to Tompkins County. I know reading the PIAs can be tedious, and there are so many for you to read, but they do describe our programming, and I like to offer, would be thrilled to meet with any of you anytime during the year to talk about my favorite subject, Tompkins Community Action. Please don't hesitate to contact me. We started out with a target of 57,937, and Jason has recommended 39,350, and we are fine with that. We were able to secure some monies that we didn't have access to when we were asking for our initial OTR. The OTR is requested because of a misunderstanding by the Continuum of Care Ranking Committee, the local Continuum of Care Ranking Committee, which defunded our Amici operations in our local application for funding for 2019-2020. The Ranking Committee, in consultation with the Governance Committee, shifted Amici House homeless supportive housing to Tier 2 funding. As a result of this ranking shift, Corn Street funding was reduced and Amici House was completely defunded. Amici House was a renewal project, and the COC leadership thought that meant that we had access to those funds, when in fact the awards are just placeholders. So when you build something like this, you have to have your operations money together to tell the capital funders that you can do this. So we had a placeholder, and the Continuum of Care leadership thought we had access to those funds, when in actuality, this federal funding is an expense reimbursement relationship, and we could not begin to draw down any funds for Amici House until we had a certificate of occupancy and started in February. Okay, now I've gone off. We just applied to the local COC NOFA for funding for 2020, and we learned of the ranking results at last week's Continuum of Care community meeting. Amici House is now ranked in Tier 1, and we are hopeful that Amici House funding will be reinstated by July 2020, which we're a year behind always, or they're ahead of us. I was calling everybody I knew in the state asking for money, and we found $18,600 through the kindness of New York State Supportive Housing Program monies through Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. Again, we are fine. We looked at our numbers. We are good with the 39,350, and we certainly appreciate your understanding and the need for this OTR. Would you like to talk about any of the successes that have happened?
Sure. So we started moving young households in the middle of February. We filled 23 apartments by the end of February. So I moved everybody in 2 weeks. I'm not very good at staging and staggering. If a young person doesn't have a place to stay that's safe, we wanted them in. So by the end of February, we had 26 young adults, 18 to 25 years old, in the building with 5 children full-time. We have now 7 children. We have 2 births. We also have 5 other children that visit on a regular basis now because their parents have adequate safe housing. Of those parents, 7 have taken parenting classes right on site with the Learning Web partnership. We have 3 households that are trained in first aid and CPR, including infant CPR. They took that training right alongside our staff, so it was a really nice partnership. All of the children are enrolled in the early Head Start classrooms. The ones we do that across supportive housing, but the young people at Amici, they go across the parking lot to Harriet Center right there. So their parents can take advantage of the on-site GED classes and do other things without having to worry about what their kids are doing. We've had 6 young people find employment within walking distance, and 2 of them have remained and moved up into management positions in those jobs. And all of this is happening with young people who have had a lot of trauma in their lives. This is their first housing that's on their own. They're dealing with issues that they didn't even know they had, mental health stuff, some substance usage. Staff is partnering with each household to find out exactly what they need and help build relationships and build trust. So to have these kind of successes within the first 6 months is actually a real statement of the work the staff is doing to support all of that happening. So we're excited to see what we can do for the next, 30 years that we agreed to run the program.
Thanks, Danielle.
Ready for questions? Anna?
I spoke to Kathy Schlather, who's on the COC ranking committee, and I promised I would share a little bit that would help elucidate a little of this. So one of the things that she shared was, you know, with the ranking system, there is a ranking system that they have to send to HUD. HUD asks for that ranking system every year. We have a certain amount of money. I will note that every year they give them the task of reducing that by at least 5% because they have been cutting this funding every year by 5%. So that's one of the challenges. There are occasions where they will give sort of an extra amount of funding for a specific thing. So this year it was on rapid rehousing for domestic violence. And what there was a misunderstanding with the COC ranking. They put the specific programs for domestic violence rapid rehousing at the top of that list of rankings, with the understanding that if they didn't get that housing or they didn't get that funding, then it would just be removed because they were no longer being considered, and then the ranking would proceed accordingly. But because that was not the way that HUD did the actual evaluation, it was kept at the top. We did get some of that funding, but everything else got bumped down on the list, which actually bumped these down into Tier 2, even though COC wasn't intending to dock them. It was always intended to be Tier 1. So now that they understand that, this coming year they have chosen to now follow what they now understand as the way HUD works. They're rechanging the ranking and putting it back so that the domestic violence will, rapid rehousing will be at the bottom, which will now be in the Tier 2, which unfortunately means it probably won't get funded. But this being staffing funding is basic, very important for the operations of programs that we have been funding for a significant period of time. So their funding series is from July to the following September. So this OTR is to fund what the remainder of the, or 2020 up until July 31st, or I think August 1st, which is when this new funding that they are now applying for will kick in next year. So we're just covering half the year that won't get covered, if that makes sense. So it's a little bit of backfilling, as it were. I promised I would share that. I really hope that made sense.
Last one.
I have nothing as eloquent or educational as Anna just offered to share. What I do have to share is that I am a member of the TC Action Board of Directors. I don't get any money. They don't give me any housing. Every now and again, they give me some food to eat at the meetings. So I just want to make sure I disclose that, when it comes down to voting on this budget, there's nothing that comes in my pocket.
Thank you for telling us. Glenn.
Jason, they needed $57,000 and you suggested $39,000.
Yes.
Why?
Because they had received $18,000 through another funding source to fill this gap for the year. So I gave the net difference to that.
What about Corn Street?
That's what
the whole thing? Okay.
Yes, yeah, this was it. So they were able to access $18,000 of different funding to help fill that gap, this $57,000, $58,000 gap. So I took the difference of that and recommended that.
We also have had trouble hiring, which has made Danielle's job twice as hard and other people's twice as hard. So we have had some savings because it's been, I don't know if any of you have encountered this, but it's been a difficult year to hire people, get people in and to get people to show up and to get people to come back. So we've had some savings there also. I also want to say that we have a strong relationship with the Advocacy Center. Danielle has been successful in her second round of tenant-based rental assistance through Homes and Community Renewal, and we are using that funding Danielle's going and staff are going into the shelter, into both shelters. Heather's aware of this, and we use that funding until the persons can come to the top of the Section 8 waiting list. So we are funding, we are able to fund those people that might not have gotten this funding, mm-hmm. the domestic violence shelter.
Martha?
You filled up the 23 apartments very, very fast, and those are... That's permanent as long as they want to stay, right?
Yes, and I can say that every once in a while we have a little pushback because there are program requirements and safety rules. All of the same residents are in place still this much later, which is pretty huge for a transient youth population. So we haven't had any turnover yet.
Okay, that sounds great. Is there... Do you need another Amici house? I mean, where are you on?
Yeah, we need another two Amicis.
Another two.
So we served those families. We could have served them all in 2 days because they were all waiting. Mm-hmm. However, we didn't feel that would be possible for our staff and also not a great idea to fill a house that fast. But there were still 70 households of this age group on the community-wide coordinated assessment waiting list after we filled Amici House. One of the things that we are participating in is Art House. The Ficino Group has come here from Missouri, and they purchased a piece of property on Cherry Street, which is used to be where JR's Foreign Auto was, and they have asked us to provide a supportive housing program for 40 of their 124 units that they're going to be building, hopefully breaking ground this January 2020 and probably be done summer of 2021. So we will be adding another 40 units of supportive housing at studios, one bedrooms and two bedrooms for a similar population. So we were happy to say yes. It's a great thing for our community. It's going to take a big bite out of the homelessness, especially for this most vulnerable population of young people with young children.
But you've only got 7 kids in 23 apartments, so most of them don't have kids.
Right. Amici House is not just specifically a families program.
Okay.
Ficino, the Art House project, will allow for more families because of 1 and 2 bedroom units.
Okay. All right. So, all right. And how about the Head Start? Is it full?
Yes, it is. Okay. 84 children and their families are being served. And it warms my heart to think that this little boy, this little 3-year-old, who finally has a place to live with his parents at Amici House, will have a story in his head that, remember, I used to walk to my school past this great little playhouse every day, and that is the Harriet Janelis Child Care Center. And it's beautiful. I can't wait for you folks to see this place. It's both places are just gorgeous.
Congratulations. That's great. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Anne?
So thank you for all the wonderful work you do. My father died when I was 3, and so my mother then became a single mother I was 5. So she had 3 children. So we went into supportive housing. I have good memories because there was lots of children around and there was a place set, you know. So to me, that's all I needed. Nice. Safe housing. So thank you.
Good for you. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you both for coming in tonight and presenting your budget. And we'll be taking these all up when we have voting times later on.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end tonight, folks. But let's not forget that not tomorrow night, but the next night, we're back again with some solid departments. We have nine of them with nine OTRs, including assessment and public health, mental health, information technology, and some other ones. So bring your waiters. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Jim Blizzard.